This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
I've said it once. I've said it 1,000 times. Fade UConn at your own risk. What's going on, everybody? Welcome into this Tuesday edition of the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings. No Michael Lombardi, although he will be back tomorrow, I'm sure, with a great tan. Nobody better to keep the seat warm than our guy Will Hill, host of the Shoulda Bet More podcast. And Will, I know you don't get the middle with the +7 coming home yesterday, but congrats on cashing some UConn futures. What a runaway from the Huskies yet again.
Yeah, and are we sure Lombardi's back tomorrow? What if I have like a great show and it's a little Tom Brady, Drew Bledsoe situation?
Wally Pipped. We'll see. He's getting Wally Pipped on the show with his own name.
Yeah, it's look, last night was sort of representative of the whole tournament, kind of like we talked about with the women's game, where it's just UConn pulls away. It's funny. It looked like Purdue was up to the task early. First 4-minute timeout, 8-minute timeout. They were trading punches and like, all right, we might be in for a good one here. Edie looked comfortable. Edie was scoring. I just think Edie got tired. And you know, it's funny, it was 23 all with like 6.5 minutes left in the half, which was the same score when UConn went on that famous 30-0 run, 23 all. And 23 all, 6 or 7 minutes left in the half, like 6.5 minutes left. Edie didn't score the rest of the half. I just think he got tired. Once UConn went to the locker room up 6, you just kind of felt, hey, UConn's going to pull away here. And once they got to double digits, it was just a matter of would Purdue hit some threes to get a backdoor. The stat of the game, really, one made three-pointer, 1 of 7 from three. I kind of thought Purdue could be competitive because, hey, they'll clean up the glass. They're a good rebounding team. 14 offensive rebounds for UConn. UConn's wings were just much more athletic than Purdue's. They didn't have to double Edie. It really shut down the rest of the team. And UConn does what they've done the past 2 years. It's funny. They trailed at halftime against Iona in their first game last year, and Hurley had not won a tournament game at UConn. There was a little pressure on him, like, hey, is this guy a big-time coach? And they dominated Iona the second half, and they've killed everybody in their sight since. So if you're sitting there on Iona saying, hey, we led this team at halftime last year, I mean, nobody else has done it. Nobody's put a glove on them. It runs counter to everything we think of this tournament where, hey, all these games are close. Somebody, you know, even if you're going to win, you're going to have a fight. You're going to have a test at some point. UConn hasn't been tested. Nobody touched them. This is one of the all-time great tournament runs. I mean, sit here and try to put it in perspective, but it's an all-time great run. What was your take on the game? Were you kind of bored by it second half? Were you just happy to cash your future? What did you think of it?
I think, like, especially early on, like you, it was a closely contested game, and I was hopeful and optimistic that maybe it would carry over. But like we've seen all too much with UConn this season, is that, and particularly in the tournament, that it can be close early and they can be a little bit slow starting, and then they just find a way to kick another gear. And it could come in a 1 minute long stretch. It could come over the course of a half. It just depends. But no matter what it is, they're going to find a way to win. And you talk about the dominance of this stretch since the start of last year's tournament. 12-0 straight up and against the spread. Their closest win they have had is by 13 points. Average margin of victory, over 23 points per game. What they have done is remarkable. Now they're the first back-to-back champion since Florida did it in 07. You talked about those threes. Their season average, 8 makes and 20 attempts per game for Purdue. You said it. They had 1 on 7 attempts, just outstanding guard play, perimeter defense from UConn, just making life hard on Purdue in so many different ways, but making, from an appearance standpoint, it looked easy, but making it hard on them. And then also from an assist standpoint for Purdue, they average assists on 65% of their field goals. They had more turnovers than assists last night. So it just felt like another one of those games, Will, where we try to talk ourselves into an underdog and we try to talk ourselves into it's going to be a close game. These are the top two teams largely for the entirety of the year in college basketball. But why even bother? Because as Dan Hurley said, probably better than anybody else, we won again by a lot.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, I don't think UConn like played all that great. I mean, I think they shot 27% from three. They got a little sloppy in garbage time where they had some turnovers, and it could have easily won by 20 something. There was not even in terms of the spread, was there really any drama? You thought maybe for a second, who knows, you go on a little run and get it to where, hey, you can hit a three to like maybe push the spread. But it was the win was never really in doubt for most of the game. The cover was never really in doubt. Once UConn got to 10, it's like, all right, Purdue just doesn't have the team to outscore UConn. Like, UConn's not blowing the 10-point lead to anybody. So kind of a boring tournament. I mean, let's be honest, it was kind of a boring tournament. I think back of this tournament, I'll think of that Friday afternoon where Yale has the crazy finish in the upset against Auburn, almost simultaneous with the Florida-Colorado buzzer beater. Other than that, though, a lot of blowouts, a lot of chalk. Team we thought was going to win, one. You know, Purdue stomped their way to this title game. UConn stomped their way to the title game, and then UConn wins and wins going away. So kind of a dud in terms of the tournament. I don't know. Did you feel the same way, or was it a little bit of a letdown?
A little bit. And I'll be curious to see what the TV ratings are, because yesterday we had that big news, the reaction to the tournament ratings in the final for the women's basketball side, and it was 18.7 million, which set a record for not only the women's game. I mean, the improvement of viewership from last year was up 85%. From 2 years ago, the last time South Carolina won, it was up 285%. And last year's men's championship, when UConn played San Diego State, was around 14.1, 14.2. So I'm curious, in another game where, yes, obviously the team on the other side is the one that you want to see a whole lot more than last year with San Diego State, it still ended up being kind of a dud of a game. So from average viewership and people dipping out and probably on the East Coast going to sleep early, I wonder if this is the first time that the women's game might actually have a better rating than the men's.
Yeah, good point. And I wonder if does the UConn's dominance turn people off, like, oh, they're going to win again. You got kind of bored of it. I mean, people, I don't know if they're at that level where people are rooting against them and they keep the TV on. But like you said, when the result's in doubt and you're starting the game 9:25, yeah. Second half started, had to be what, 11 o'clock. It's just once UConn goes up 10, 12 points and you're getting close to midnight, people on the East Coast, they got to wake up the next morning. Unless you bet the game, unless you're, you know, a diehard UConn fan, you say, all right, UConn's going to win. I'm sure a lot of TV sets went off right around that time. So this is, I'm sure the attention now will turn, hey, can Kentucky lure Hurley away? I don't see that happening. I'm curious how you feel. I'm sure they'll come with sort of a blank check and say, hey, how much do you want? What can we do? I don't know. Would Hurley do that? He can win as much as he's won in Connecticut. They love him here. He's built up some equity. I don't know that he'd jump ship and jump into that hotbed where there's going to be a lot of pressure. And hey, there's no equity built up if you take the Kentucky job and you lose in the Sweet 16 next year. He would say, why are we paying this guy all this money? So I would think he would stay put. I would think UConn gives him a nice little pay raise, and I think he stayed put. That's something you'd agree with?
I would. I think he stays there. And he, by the way, only got to celebrate the win last night for so long before he was asked about it in his postgame press conference. Here's Hurley's response.
Yeah. I don't think that's a concern. You know, my wife, you should have her answer that. Yeah.
We can maybe arrange a press conference for Mrs. Hurley in the morning. Congratulations, coach.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, she'll answer that question better than I can.
So my thing with this is, Will, that even though obviously Kentucky is such a renowned program, a blue blood, I mean, UConn, from a program standpoint, the last quarter century has kind of been the team. And they're like a modern day blue blood now. They have turned things into their favor. And he's a Jersey guy. He loves the area. UConn, from what they've done on the men's and women's side for basketball in this small little town, has been remarkable. If I'm him, like, why not stay put, just get more money to stay where you are and keep having success? Because he did it this year, even with three of their best players leaving last season.
Yeah, for sure. And you don't look at Kentucky and say, well, I have to go to Kentucky because I can't win here. I have to go to there to win. I mean, this is six titles in 25 years for UConn. And I'll be honest, once Calhoun left, I mean, have you ever been to Storrs, Connecticut? I don't know if you have. Anyone that's been there, you go there and you think, wow, this is the hotbed. This is the premier program, the premier school in college basketball. It's really incredible what Calhoun did. Once he left, they won that title with Ollie. But after that, there was a drop off. I was like, I don't know if they'll ever get it back to what it was. You know, they were in that dinky American conference where it was like, man, they had some rough years, some really lean years. So I was really, I remember talking with some buddies like, man, I don't know if we ever see them win again. I don't know if we ever see them get to the top again, just because it's such a tough place to recruit. And with Calhoun gone, who knows? Calhoun never won back-to-back. This is back-to-back, 12 in a row. So he's gotten to where Calhoun took the program, maybe even higher. So incredible job, just an absolutely incredible job. And look, six titles in 25 years, that's pretty damn good. It's not like you have to go move your family and take a little more money. He's got plenty of money. He's going to get plenty of money. So my bet would be he stays put. We've already seen, I think, Nate Oates go on the record and say, hey, I'm staying put. So it's not like people look at Kentucky and say, oh, I have to take that job. We've already seen people turn that job down in the last 24 hours. So it'll be interesting.
Some of these other college basketball coaches need to do whatever it takes to intercept Dan Hurley's suitcase from Phoenix back to Connecticut so that they can get that Magic Dragon underwear out of there, because it continues to win throughout the tournament. That's one of like the funniest and my favorite storylines. I think it's hysterical. By the way, as we look ahead to next year's national championship odds, could we get a three-peat with the UConn Huskies? Huskies. They're the second shot on the board. Duke is the favorite, 10-1. UConn there at 12-1, followed by Kansas and North Carolina, 14-1. The only team to three-peat in the men's game is UCLA when they went through that crazy stretch of winning seven straight under John Wooden in the 60s and 70s. Neither Florida nor Duke, who have gone back-to-back since, even made it to the second weekend of the tournament that following third year. Florida missed the tournament altogether, and Duke lost in the round of 32. Does that give you any reason for hesitation about this UConn team looking ahead to next year, or should we expect what we have already seen under Dan Hurley?
I have no idea. I don't know what the team's going to look like. You figure Kling goes to the pro. Castle, whenever he decides to go to the pro, I think he'll be a good pro. What's the team look like, and you know, who do you replace in terms of the transfer portal? Obviously, he's got it rolling here, so if you want to take it, I mean, it's a long time to tie up your money, but I'd like to see first who declares, who doesn't. I'm sure we'll see pretty quickly a few of these guys, but if you can bring most of the team back, I mean, I get it at 12-1. It's just, I want to know what team I'm betting on before I make that bet.
The last national champion to replace two lottery picks was Duke in 2015, and that Blue Devils team went to the Sweet 16. The Huskies do have two prospects ranked in the ESPN Top 100 coming to stores next season, Ahmad Noel and Isaiah Abraham. So we'll see what ends up playing out there again. 12-1, the number looking forward. We're going to hit the break. We're just getting started here on the Lombardi Line. When we come back, why this team might plan to sit their top three draft pick. The Chargers appear to think the sky is the limit for their offense, Will. Plus, is Merrill Hodge right or wrong when it comes to Drake May? He says he could get some people fired. We'll discuss that and more coming up in News or Noise. Stay with us right here on the Lombardi Line. This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back into the Lombardi Line. Will Hill and Stormy Bonatoni with you. And if you haven't yet, make sure you check out our new and improved VSiN.com website. All of the same great content you're used to, but with a fresh new look. You'll get best bets from all of our experts and hosts. You can check out the latest betting splits, exclusive articles from all of our writers, including the one and only Michael Lombardi, who does a weekly column, odds by state, betting tools, betting guides, and a whole lot more. Head to VSiN.com today. To set the table for the rest of the show, Tom Giles, hosted NBC Sports Boston, is going to join us in about 15 minutes. We'll get his reaction to the UConn win last night, as well as talk all things Boston, MLB underway, his thoughts on the Red Sox. Maybe he has some action today. The Celtics and their future in the Eastern Conference. Plus, the Patriots sit there with the number three overall selection in this year's draft. Also, with the national championship now behind us, it's Masters Week. And so we'll turn our attention to Augusta National and everything going on out there a little bit later on in the show. But for now, Will, lots of news always sprinkling out and about with the NFL. This is a 24/7, 365 sport. And I need your help to decipher what is actually news and what is noise. Roll it.
Is it news?
Corleone is a man who insists on hearing bad news immediately.
Or just noise?
Are you going to act like this is news?
Just noise.
Let's separate the impactful from the insignificant with one simple question. News or noise?
I feel like I always need to rephrase this, right? Like, there are a lot of headlines. Instead of saying there's lots of news right now, there's a lot of headlines. So we need to separate the news from the noise. And let's start out there in Los Angeles, where we know they love headlines. The offseason program got underway last week for the Chargers. This team trying to set a new culture under their new head coach in Jim Harbaugh. Run game coordinator Andy Bischoff told reporters on Monday, Justin Herbert is a player with rare intelligence and the team needs to put him in a different and unique offense in order to make the most of that ability. Apparently, Greg Roman in a meeting even said they want it to be epic. Okay, so news or noise that the Chargers are working to build an epic offense this offseason?
I'll go news. I believe in Harbaugh and I believe in Herbert. Now, you're going to have to decorate the rest of the team a little bit. They got rid of, you know, the Allens and the Williams and all these older players that are always hurt. You're going to have to replace them with something. So I don't know if it'll happen this year, but I do think this is going in the right direction. Hey, coach and quarterback, that's a lot of it in the NFL. And they've got, to me, A's at both positions. So I think this is news.
Bischoff saying, why not create something different than has ever been done? I did think it was interesting because everything that they've done to this point, at least, and we'll see what happens in the draft, but has been prioritizing defense. We talk about the restructures that they had with Khalil Mack and Joey Bosa to get under the cap. They add Denzel Perryman. But you talk about those departures, and it's a lot. Like, you think trading Keenan Allen to the Bears, you cut Mike Williams, you let Austin Eckler and Gerald Everett all go. You do bring in Gus Edwards and a couple other pieces, but to say that you're going to create an epic offense that's going to be something different that's ever been done before, and all you really have is your quarterback, it's a little dicey to me. It is obviously a big draft ahead for this team. And another thing they talked about was they want the Chargers to be a place where offensive linemen are going to want to come and play because it's an O-line centric space. And this is the second time now, Will, that we've heard comments about the offensive line coming out of Chargers camp. Is this just reinforcing more and more that it's likely going to be a tackle in the first round for LA?
Probably, but you do introduce the idea that, hey, they're in a position where teams might want to jump them to get a quarterback. They don't need a quarterback, and the Chargers need a lot of stuff. Like you said, hey, they need receivers, they need running backs, they need to use defense, where, okay, maybe you just turn the pick in, or maybe you listen to offers and you could fill two or three holes with that pick and just trade down and collect picks, because they do have a lot of holes. Maybe you go with the quantity more than the quality and you trade down. So that would make it more iffy. I do think if they stay put, they would probably go offensive line, if not receiver, but I would think offensive line is the favorite.
Yep, O-line minus 110 right now to go wide out plus 125. Let's stick with the quarterbacks, though, here. Tua Tagovailoa said earlier this week that contract talks have been good and that while he's focusing right now on his family and downtime, there are exciting times ahead. News or noise?
I guess it's news. I'm sure they're going to pay him. It seems like they're going down that road. I would not do it. I wouldn't. That game in Kansas City, though, there's limitations. And when it looks good, it looks good. But playing in the cold, the wind, when everything's not perfect around him, I just don't know if you're going to give him one of these mega contracts and expect him to carry the team, what that's going to look like. I have a feeling what that's going to look like. They're going to do it. I wouldn't do it. It's easy for me to say now. I'll admit, it's easy for me to say sitting here in my room. I don't have to find a replacement. Like, it's just, there's not enough good quarterbacks to go around it. You at least have respectability at the position, but I'm assuming they're going to pay him. So I wouldn't do it, but I think they will.
Yeah, entering the fifth and final year of that rookie deal. Yes, Tua led the league in passing yards last year, but obviously we've talked about it a lot. Really struggled against good teams and really struggled when Tyreek Hill was unavailable. So I wonder what that means for the team moving forward. Although Teron Armstead did say, quote, "We have enough to beat anybody at full strength. That's our mindset." Well, let's get Bradley Chubb and Jalen Phillips healthy on the back end first, considering all the other pieces that you lost defensively, and go from there. But I don't know. This is just a Dolphins team I do not believe in. Any thoughts on some of their odds? Plus 200 in the AFC East, 11-1 AFC, 22-1 Super Bowl odds, and the win total sitting 9.5, Will.
I would look under. The AFC's loaded. Tua stayed healthy last year, but he's always one hit away from missing time. And if he misses time, as flawed as he is, if he misses time, what does the rest of that team look like? I would go under. I'm not looking to play their futures. I don't trust Tua to against good competition to win 3-4 playoff games. It just, look, this is a team. I mean, we talk about the Cowboys and their drought and reaching an NFC title game. They haven't won a playoff game in 25 years, Miami. This is a league where teams win playoff games all the time. 25 years without a playoff win is a long time.
Yeah, and speaking to what you just said about not trusting them against good teams, against teams that were 500 win percentage or worse last year, the Dolphins 10-1, Tua had 22 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. The team averaged 35.5 points per game. Teams that were sub 500, Tua had 8 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, averaging 16 points per game, and they were 1-6 in those games. It's not good. If they're over 500, if they're under 500, not good things here. New Patriots head coach Rod Mayo said that if New England drafts a quarterback with the 3rd overall pick, he might sit them as a rookie. Quote, "Look, we could bring a quarterback in here and he may not be ready to play. They have a lot of comfort there due to having Jacoby Brissett in the room." News or noise in Patriots country?
I guess it's news, but it doesn't surprise me. Either way, if you draft a quarterback 3rd, he's probably not going to sit the whole year, because I don't think it's going to look great with Brissett with the lack of talent around him. You know how this goes. You draft a quarterback that high in the draft, eventually the team's 2-4, 2-6, and the team says, all right, what are we doing with Jacoby Brissett? Let's at least get a look. Let's get him some reps for the younger quarterback. So the younger quarterback, I would think, would be playing sooner rather than later, even if not week 1.
Patriots are 25-1 in the AFC East. Not looking good. They sit there with the number 3 overall selection, where Drake May is favored to be that pick at minus 135. Former ESPN analyst and NFL player Merrill Hodge was asked about Drake May on WCCO radio this week, and he's doubling down on his negative feelings about the young quarterback. Take a listen.
Drake May will get you fired. Drake May's the kind of player gets you fired. And especially you draft him in the top 5, you know, top 3. You know, he's going to get you fired. And for, let's use the process and accuracy, I am not seeing, I cannot, Malik Willis might be the only guy I could think of that is as erratic as Drake May. I studied him for 2 years, and I am telling you, I have yet to find, actually, I would say probably his best game. I watched every one of his games last year. It's probably the Pitt game. And that was an average football game.
News or noise, Hodge doubling down. Drake May will get you fired, Will.
I'll go news again. That's harsh. That's about the meanest thing you could say about a player. Imagine somebody said that about you. Like, what do you think of Stormy as a host or a sideline reporter? Stormy will get you fired. My goodness, that's rough. I will say, though, like, quarterbacks being bad is usually the correct bet. I mean, you just look at the first round picks the last 5-10 years historically. I mean, it's a very low batting average, especially recently. The Trey Lances, Zach Wilsons, Mac Jones. I mean, just go down the line. Even Lawrence, who was supposed to be great, wasn't you know, the player we thought he'd be. So, I like the talent, but Hodges had a good track record with these, so I'll take his word for it, I guess. I you have to consider, you know, his opinion and his track record here.
Passing on Drake May could also get you fired if he turns into Josh Allen.
Great
so
point.
We'll
you
have
covered
to
him. Did you like him?
We'll have to dig into that deeper when we have more than a minute to go. Highs and lows, certainly, but okay. A lot of potential, which is kind of what you're looking for in the draft, right?
Right.
To go number 2 overall, May is plus 140. Number 3, again, minus 135 favorite. To go 4, plus 750 behind Marvin Harrison Jr. and J.J. McCarthy. Last one, Falcon social media recently posted Kirk Cousins vows to do everything he can to deliver a Super Bowl win for the Falcons. News or noise?
That is a lot of noise. I mean, he's won one playoff game in 12 years. He's 36, 37 coming off an Achilles. They're not winning the Super Bowl. That's noise.
I was also laughing. This opened the door for the people at PFT to criticize his thought process of taking Tuesdays off because he doesn't work on Tuesdays during the season. So it's like, are you really doing everything you can? If you're not working on Tuesdays.
Read his books.
Exactly. NFC South, Falcons are an odds on minus 130 favorite. They're 10-1 in the NFC. Those Super Bowl odds, if Kirko can do it, 22-1, and he's a 35-1 shot to win MVP. We're going to hit the break. When we come back, Tom Giles of NBC Sports Boston is going to join us. We can dive a little deeper into Drake May. Does he think it could get Gerard Mayo fired? We'll see. Be right back here on the Lombardi Line. This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Stormy Bonantoni and Will Hill in for Michael today as we welcome you back to the Lombardi Line. Remember, for a limited time, we at VSiN are offering 2 weeks for free to see our exclusive betting splits page when you go to vsin.com/splits. The VSiN betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes, so you can see changes in action. Find out where the public's betting based on the number of tickets and where the money doesn't match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Take advantage, though, right now, because, again, this is a limited time offer. vsin.com/splits and claim your free 2 week access to VSiN betting splits. Live from downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. We are back here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, after UConn doubles down and goes back-to-back, winning the national championship last night against Purdue. And somebody who is not afraid to lay the number with UConn joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line. Tom Giles hosts the weekly spread on NBC Sports Boston, dialed into all things Northeast sports. Welcome in, Tom, and congrats on the dub last night. How about those freaking UConn Huskies that have just been dominant every single tournament game since the start of last year's dance?
Yeah. And, you know, the Northeast is very interesting in the way that we kind of treat college sports. It's basically like if you're from Connecticut or you went to UConn, you're a UConn fan. Otherwise, you know, we all just put up with each other and your respective teams. It's weird. It's not like, hey, it's a New England thing. We all rally around it. But it's just it's. it's just amazing to see what they've done. And it's absolutely incredible that, you know, Dan Hurley has become, in my opinion, the best coach in college basketball. And I don't think there's anyone even close in the conversation.
Tom, if I made you bet over under for how many games the Celtics lose in the Eastern Conference playoffs with how much of a mess the Bucks are, you got teams like the Magic and the Pacers who aren't on that level. If I put it at, say, 5.5, would you go over or under? Because it seems pretty set up here for Boston to walk to the finals at least.
Yeah, I guess that's why you probably want to lean under in that situation. But, you know, you look at last year, they went 6 games against Atlanta, which they really didn't have any business doing that. It took them 7 games to get through Philadelphia. So I think they're still capable at times of kind of stubbing their toe a little bit. But if you maybe choose, I'd probably go under in this situation, thinking they go 5 games in the first round and maybe 6 in each of the two respective rounds.
Celtics, a -140 favorite to win the Eastern Conference. And I feel like the big conversation around the Eastern Conference is just who's going to give the Celtics the biggest test? Like, who's going to be the one team that maybe could be their challenger? Milwaukee seems to be falling apart right now. And I know those two are going head to head tonight. But who do you think would be the biggest challenger in the East to Boston?
It's a really interesting question, because the other thing that's kind of, you look around and they could be seeing Miami or Philadelphia as their first round opponent. And you know, I think there's still a lot of Celtics fans to look at and Miami as just being kind of a mental hurdle that they have to get past. I mean, clearly on paper, they're a better team than the Miami Heat, but Eric Spoelstra, when he gets to the postseason, Jimmy Butler, they just kind of take it up to another level. So their first round matchup's not going to be a cakewalk by any means if they end up playing the Heat or even Philadelphia, who, you know, had one of the best records in the NBA before Joel Embiid got hurt. So now he's coming back and they're not your typical 7 or 8 seed either. So those two teams, I think, could at least, I don't know if they necessarily give them a series, but they're not going to be a rollovers or walkovers in terms of, you know, the Eastern Conference. And then I think everyone else just feels like they're kind of the same. It should be Milwaukee, but Milwaukee just, they still can't figure out how to play defense. And I don't know why you would be that afraid of Milwaukee at this point.
Tom, switching gears to football, it's funny to look at the Patriots after all those years, decades of dominance, look at the season win total and see 4.5 is a startling number. But do you have any sense here for the draft, what order these quarterbacks are going to go? And is there a consensus in the Boston area in terms of who they want as the Patriots' next quarterback?
We in the Boston area have not been in this position for a very long time when it comes to the draft. So it's been, I think, quite the oversaturation of draft talk, like all day, every day for months. And we still got a couple more weeks to go. There are some fans out there that I think would like to see them actually trade out of the pick, because they need a left tackle. They need a wide receiver. They have so many needs that if you could, you know, stockpile 3 or maybe even 4 first round picks for that number 3 overall pick. I know some fans want to go in that direction. I think that you have to take the quarterback while you're there at 3. And it feels to me like there's growing momentum for Drake May. You saw JJ McCarthy, maybe his name kind of move up and you're hearing some of that. But in my opinion, I feel like the JJ McCarthy rumors are almost to just say, hey, we're open for business here. If you thought that you were going to trade up and get JJ McCarthy at 4, we might take him at 3. So it's just, I think you're at that point in the draft season where you're hearing a little bit of everything, but if it's me, I think it's Drake May at number 3, and I think that's the direction that they're going
to
go.
Yeah, we love to say it's lying season, right? Drake May, a -135 favorite to go number 3 overall, followed by Jaden Daniels, J.J. McCarthy, +330. And what have you made of some of the comments that have been going viral multiple times now from Merrill Hodge and his thoughts on Drake May compared with, like, your personal evaluation and what you've heard from people around the building and that are in the know with the Patriots and what they're looking for?
Yeah, I mean, I guess Merrill Hodge, he's hit on a couple over the years. But, you know, one of the other things, too, is it's, you know, if you're playing the numbers game, it's more likely than not that a first-round quarterback is going to fail. That's just how it's gone historically, and even in the top 5. So, you know, he might be right when it all comes down. But at the same time, I actually like what you said, Stormy, in the last segment, where if you're Gerard Mayo, or Elliot Wolf in this situation, who's basically your de facto GM who hasn't necessarily been given the full-time title, can you afford to pass on the number 3 quarterback? Can you afford to pass on Drake May? You know, maybe he can get you fired, if he's not good enough 3 or 4 years from now, but if you also pass on him and someone else takes him and he turns out to be that Josh Allen or that premier quarterback, then can you really live with that as well? So they're in a tough spot, and that's why I think that you have to take the quarterback. You have to take the risk there that rather than trading back and hoping that everything else works out, because even then, those draft picks are not necessarily locked to land.
Tom, we are, I think, less than an hour away from the home opener at Fenway. Red Sox actually played pretty well, 7-3 on the West Coast. They get Burns today in Baltimore. Do you have a play in this game, and what is the temperature here with the Red Sox, the Red Sox fans? Are they into this team? Do they believe it all?
The temperature is at like an all-time high right now for what I think it might be for the month of April in this season, because people are loving it. They're 7-3. It's like 60 degrees here. Like, this is, it's sunny. Like, this is the perfect day for opening day. Everyone's optimistic, but I think that a lot of Red Sox fans, casual Red Sox fans, are pretty realistic about this team. And I don't think anyone's expecting to go to the playoffs. I know that a lot of fans are still mad about what they did this offseason, which was not much at all. And we're kind of seeing the direction they're going in now, locking up some of their younger guys to those team-friendly deals like Brian Bello and Rafael Sedana. So they're kind of going that direction. But I think people are into it. Here's the thing, though, for today. They got Brian Bello on the mound. You look at his splits, and this is – it's out there. There's a lot of people that have shared this information. But last year, you know, his ERA in night games was somewhere around 3. His ERA in day games last year, and it was 10 starts in day games, was up near 7. So he really struggled for whatever reason pitching during the day. And here he is for the home opener going up against Baltimore. I think the Baltimore team total over 4.5. You're looking at +105, right around there. So that's what I've got my eye on. The only thing that's working against you there is maybe a little bit of wind coming in from right field.
Okay. Or Orioles -130 favorite out there in Fenway. The Red Sox +110 total for the game 8. And we talked about the Celtics earlier, big picture, but they are in action coming up later today against the Bucks, 2.5-point favorite in that game. Is there anything that you're looking at from a betting approach there?
So the Celtics in general, since they've locked up the number one overall seed in the NBA, for me, the thing that's been most consistent to look at is, you know, who's in, who's out of the lineup. And if they're missing a point guard, whether it's Derek White, Drew Holiday, they're missing a couple guys. Peyton Pritchard has been just a machine. He's going to get his minutes. He's going to play with the second unit. If Joe Mazzulla decides we don't need to win this game, because they don't need to win any of these games, if he just decides he's going to sit all the starters in the fourth quarter, Peyton Pritchard will get a ton of minutes. And he had 10.6 assists the other night just in the fourth quarter, 20 points, 8 assists in that game. His numbers have been right around 11.5 for points. His assists have been around 4.5, maybe 5.5. But that's a player you're going to want to look at. The only thing is that it looks like the Celtics are going to be, it maybe one of their big guys is going to be out, maybe both big guys, but I don't really see how that would kind of help Peyton Pritchard. So this might be the one time you want to just lay off it. However, I'd keep an eye on Peyton Pritchard over the last 3 games as well, especially the season finale where he's due to go off for about 30 points.
Great insight, Tom. We so appreciate your time. Thanks for doing this.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Tom Giles. Thanks, Tom. Make sure you follow him on X at Tom Giles NBCS. And it's Giles with a G, by the way, because I you know, sometimes you get confused with those G's. Is it a hard G or is it not? But there you
do
go. Maybe it's just me. Can this be my blonde moment of the day? Let me live. Also host of The Weekly Spread on NBC Sports Boston. Appreciate his time. We're going to hit the break here when we come back. Let's talk a little more draft, because DraftKings continues to put up more and more prop markets as it pertains to the action coming up at the end of this month. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
An action-packed fight card is taking over Las Vegas for UFC 300, and DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of UFC, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any UFC 300 wager. Download the app and use the promo code VSIN, V-S-I-N, when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. Will Hill and Stormy Bonantoni with you as we welcome you back to the Lombardi Line. And in a moment, we're going to get into a little bit of draft talks and potential draft props. But we do have Major League Baseball on our television screens right now and a few games that are set to get underway pretty soon, Will, one of which you do have action in. So let's talk through it.
Yeah, I like Baltimore minus $1.40 or so. I just think Burns against this Red Sox team, who's off to a nice start, but I don't know how real it is. I think Tom mentioned in our last spot that this is a little bit of fool's gold. Wow, minus 125 I'm seeing in front of me. I don't know if that's an updated line. Obviously, shop around, get the best number. I just think the Red Sox, they beat up on the A's. They had a nice series against the Mariners, but this is a team they were lined at 77 and a half, something like that, and the sharps were hammering the unders. So they don't have a lot of pitching. They're always going to be able to hit, and there will be some buzz in that ballpark for opening day, but I just think Baltimore's on a different level and coming off a bad 2 out of 3 games against the Pirates. So I think Baltimore gets back on track. I think that price is reasonable to lay here with Burns and the Orioles.
Yeah, minus 125 is what I'm seeing too. And you look at the Red Sox futures, Will, and I think that kind of says it all of what people project this team to be. They're 11-1, the longest shot in the division by far.
And that's a long number for division. I mean, that's not to, I mean, 11 double digit odds, not just to you know, make the playoffs or win a World Series. That's just to win the division, be better than 4 other teams. Obviously, it's a good division, but yeah, you're right. That does speak to the expectations for them.
Yeah. So the Orioles on the road there in Fenway, minus 125 favorite, total 8, plus 140 on the run line for Baltimore as well. And you do have a little sweat going in this Pirates Tigers game. What do you got?
I mean, it's about to conclude one way or another, but I have under 4.5 first five in Detroit, Pittsburgh. I should have mentioned it off the top, but we got 2-1 in the fifth, man on first, nobody out. So this is as what usually happens in these baseball first fives. It's going to be a photo finish here. Yep. I'm one swing away from losing it, one swing away from winning it. So
if you turn,
you can probably do the rest of the show for a little bit while I just sweat out the old Tigers and the Buccos. Pirates off to a very nice start, 9-2. I talked about them when they were 11-1 last week to win the division. That's a team that hasn't been good in a while. They got a good fan base, so I'm rooting for Pittsburgh to have a nice season. That's off to a good start. Both teams are.
You know, if you turn bright red, though, we'll know what happened. I haven't seen your setup, by the way, and I can see that you're glancing up to watch the game. So how many TVs do you have in front of you? What's the situation at home
just
right now?
Just one.
Okay.
Just one.
All right. Fair.
Well, you go to that. If you have DirecTV, you go to that 720 channel, and it gives you – it goes to all the different boxes of all the games. So you can basically watch in little boxes of all the games at once. It's a good way to keep eye on games. It's almost like the red zone in the NFL where, you know, you can just have all the games on in front of you. If you see something that's interesting, you hone in on that game and you go to that specific channel and just kind of monitor everything. It's fun. Do you bet baseball at all or not really?
Occasionally in the summer when I'm going to have to, then yes, I'll get dialed in. Like the last couple of years, I've basically been doing fantasy baseball to make sure that I'm keeping track of what's going on. And
do you have a team this year?
We don't need to talk about it, Will. This is an area that, nope, I refuse because I have no idea what I'm doing. It's just for a monitoring process, okay? And it is not going well. And for somebody who has the expertise level that you do, I'm not going down this road with you, my friend. But yes.
How bad could it be? We're 10 days into the season. How bad could it possibly be?
Let's just say I'm not the Red Sox, okay? But we're when we get into like June and July and there's not really a whole lot to get into, then I'll have some fun and I'll be watching Braves games every day, and so I'll basically be just like monitoring who they play and how, like, use them as my measuring stick for other teams is kind of the way that I play it. But anything else that you have later on in the day?
What happened? Oh my goodness. So 2-1. I got under 4.5. 2-1. Man on first. 2 outs. Line drive. Deep fly to left field. And the guy robs him of a home run to save the bet. Oh, my goodness. Next time I complain about a bad beat, remind me of that one.
There we go, Will.
Catch. You'll see that catch shortly. You'll see that catch everywhere. That was a great catch. My goodness.
That's how we set the tone and start the day. And let's carry it over into Baltimore. And if you really like it that much, especially at that price, maybe I'll jump on too. And
play
I can
with me. Yeah.
I can
let's
have an early
family play. By the way, what is your fantasy team name? Can you tell us that much?
It's literally not anything cool. It's sounded out like phonetically the Acuna Juniors. So just like, let me live my dreams. Okay. See, this is why we don't want to talk about this. Let's move on to the NFL draft here.
Quality content. I totally disagree. This is good content.
This is my nightmare.
The Acuna Juniors. Got it.
Is that not the funnest thing to say?
That's clever. Did you come up with that?
Well, I just love his name, and that's the way that I've always said it. So I just wrote it out like letter for letter, how it sounds. It's my favorite name in baseball, bar none. But as it pertains to the NFL draft, not as cool of names, especially at the top with Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May. Like, come on, let's spice it up. Where's Kool-Aid McKinstry? Let's pull that in there. But do you have any bets on the draft, though? Is there anything that did stand out to you in terms of some of these position totals? Or if like I know quarterback, for example, sitting at 4.5, and I know it's juiced really high at around like minus 250, but if you feel confident that there's going to be at least five quarterbacks that go, you don't mind laying that type of a price. So is there anything that has stood out to you?
I do. I laid the juice with that at that bet for that reason, where I think it was Rappaport or Jeremiah saying, hey, not only is Penix going to go in the first round, but he's probably going to go in the top 15, which, hey, I know it's lying season, but that gives you some pretty good wiggle room, where he could be off by 10 picks. He's still going 25th in. Plus, I mean, first of all, teams need quarterbacks. We watched the league last year. All these teams needed quarterbacks. Plus, next year is a weaker quarterback draft. So if these teams get the 20s and say, hey, I can't find my quarterback next year, I'm going to have to trade up and get my guy this year. So that adds to it. I just think we'll get five. I don't know. I don't have the number again. We can't bet this stuff in Connecticut, so I don't know what's widely available or not. I could see, I know over 6.5 receivers was at plus money. Mm-hmm. I could see that being one where, especially now with the Bills, they're going to need one. So 6.5 wide receivers is one that's interesting. And when Diggs got traded, sometimes, you know, when trades are made, you think of the obvious thing, like, okay, the number on the Texans might move, or the Texans win total, division, the juice, whatever might move. When the Bills traded Diggs, my first thought process is, hey, they're going to need to draft a receiver. So Bills to draft the receiver, I know that's moved. But
yeah,
that's just sort of the mindset of like, hey, it's like when a quarterback gets hurt, if Mahomes gets hurt, they're going to move the spread right away. What doesn't move right away is like the team total, the first half total. Sometimes those bets you don't think of as much are the slower ones to move. So that's just something to keep in mind going forward. One that I think is interesting too, it's gone back and forth. The Jets to draft an offensive lineman. First, it was a favorite, then an underdog. Now it's around even money, slightly plus money. I don't see their offseason acquisitions as, hey, we solved our offensive line. It's a lot of older players. Tyron Smith is not exactly, we said yesterday, he's not exactly a Cal Ripken Jr. in terms of being an Iron Man. So he's probably going to miss some games. So at 10, I think they could go either way. They could go offensive line or receiver. Maybe they go Bowers, but I get the sense that they don't look at their offensive line like, all right, we solved it. It's almost like a pitching staff where you don't need five starting pitchers. You need like 6 or 7 because a couple are going to get hurt. So I wouldn't pick, picking an offensive lineman past them. That's one that's interesting, but
yeah,
we were just talking about this before the break. Like, there's not that much to bet. The books don't hang as much stuff, and there's more eyeball. When there's more eyeballs on stuff, like, there's no mistakes out there. Like, none of us know which order the quarterbacks are going to go. It's priced according. Like, everything's pretty much priced properly. And I don't know. It's harder to bet. There's more eyeballs on this stuff.
Yeah, books don't put a lot of this stuff up there because they don't want to lose, right? And this is one of the events where they're more likely to lose than anything else. And to your point about the Jets, tight end is plus 120. It's the same price Brock Bowers to go to the Jets if you look at whatever those alternate markets are. So there's not even like there's that little wiggle room where you see a 5 to 10 cent difference. Right. But Bowers to go top 10 is plus 105. I think that would be a better bet if you were looking at it from that perspective, is to take the Jets to take a tight end or to take Bowers versus Bowers being top 5, because it feels like they would be the team that would take him and they sit at the 10th selection. But with the Jets, I'm with you 100%. I would go offensive line. As much as I love Brock Bowers and think he's a remarkable talent, and you're trying to stockpile Aaron Rodgers with as many weapons as you possibly can, like, protection is key. And I think it would be a massive mistake if they didn't get somebody up front.
That's what I was going to ask you. So you've seen all these college players, you've seen Barry, like, you know, obviously the Jets, you know, these college players, you'd pick an offensive lineman?
Absolutely. Like, especially considering the talent of this class specifically at tackle and what they have offensive lineman wise, like, I think that's what the Jets need to do. And I like
Bowers. Would be fun. I admit Bowers would be fun on that team. If you go Bowers, Garrett Wilson, better offensive line, that would be with good defense. They'd be fun. I bet them like an idiot last year for futures. And who knows? Maybe if Rodgers stayed healthy, that would have been okay. Although with that offensive line, probably not. But I don't know if the offensive line's better, if Rodgers can be healthy, add a top 10 pick. I don't know. I could see myself talking myself into
that. You add a top 10 pick at tight end who is also coming off of an injury. Do they not have enough players that are on this team coming off of an injury? Like, let's relax. Also, what you said about receivers, though, I do have that number in front of me. Over 6.5, plus 140.
Well, it's come down a little bit, but still plus money. It's interesting.
Okay.
You would make a good GM. I think the Acuña Juniors are going to be just fine. You would make a good GM.
We're on the comeback trail, okay? I know it's early. Things haven't gone well yet, but we're coming back. We will take our last time out of this hour, resetting for hour two when we come back. Recapping what happened in last night's national championship game. UConn does it again, but can they three-peat? All that and more when we come back on the Lombardi Line.